studios in Manhattan, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Packer Transplants Live. I am Aaron Nagler, and with me, as always, is my co-host with the mo-host, Corey Banky, my partner here at Cheesehead TV. Directing our live blog is the esteemed Brian Caravu, and joining us as always is Jamie Jors and John Rahor from our fan blog, Eat More Cheese, here at Cheesehead TV, as well as the best and brightest from around the Packers blogosphere. So Corey, Banky, tell us what is on tap tonight.
Joining us later tonight is one of the best veteran beat writers you will find anywhere on the planet, longtime friend of the show, Mr. Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But first, we have the good, the bad, and the ugly. We got the good. We got James Jones.
On fire, two games in a row.
Aaron QB1 Rodgers.
Finally settling into a groove.
Tremon, my man, Williams.
Playing like a pro bowler.
And we got the bad. We got Sam Shields.
Yikes.
BJ Raji.
Teach me how to get a personal penalty.
Graham Harrell.
You had one job, Graham. One job.
And we have the ugly, the perennial ugly of the uglies, besides the replacement refs, who I probably would have preferred in this last game, Mr. Jeff Triplett.
The worst regular official in the NFL currently, and they send him to Lambeau a week after getting royally hosed by the replacement refs. Thanks for nothing, NFL.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Corey Banky, how the hell are you?
I'm good.
We and that's it. That's as bad as my language will get tonight.
There
I have to apologize right off the bat for my expletive-laden diatribes last week. I was very upset, as I'm sure most of you were. Trying to keep this family-friendly show, so
yeah.
I'm going to keep it to hell tonight.
Shame on you.
How the hell are you, Corey?
I'm good. I'm really good. I saw this.
Nothing wrong with that at all. A little Tremon Williams breakup in the end zone.
Ooh, I like it.
So,
I like it.
More importantly than a Packers victory, more important than anything going on with the Green Bay Packers, throwback weekend, total success.
Throwback weekend.
Throwback weekend two.
Pretty amazing.
Electric Boogaloo.
Number two.
You were there.
In the books.
How was it?
It was awesome.
Yeah?
It was great.
Fantastic.
I felt like a bride at a wedding.
Why is that?
Because I wanted to talk to everybody for like a long time,
right.
I basically could only talk to like, there were so many people, it was like one person 5 minutes.
Yeah, you got to set yourself limits, of course. You're so popular,
awesome.
Corey.
That's not what I was trying to say. I think everybody felt that. Like, everybody's like trying to talk to everybody else, and it's like, it's really cool.
It was very nice of Mike Silver from Yahoo Sports and Albert Breer from NFL Network.
Got to meet Albert Breer Friday night. That was
graced
awesome.
You with their presence. Very nice.
That was great.
Saw the pictures. If you haven't seen the pictures, check out Wally Pingle's Facebook page. He's got all sorts of great pictures up from Throwback Weekend 2.
Jersey Al posted a picture of me that he never should have posted to Facebook. I'm really upset about it. My mouth is like eating a brat, and I have a beer in my hand, and my grandmother is like...
So it's the true Corey.
Yeah, but the way my face is, my grandmother's like, are you mad right now?
Oh, I love it. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk some Packers.
You said Throwback Weekend.
I know. Throwback Weekend. There it was.
The key to Throwback Weekend.
Oh,
I figured it out, okay?
Oh, dear.
This is the key for Throwback Weekend 3. You cannot have shots. You can't start Friday night with shots. Don't do that. I learned that at Throwback Weekend 1, actually.
And did you remember that important
and
lesson?
And it was awesome. You know why? I learned that at Throwback Weekend 1 and the playoffs.
There you go.
The Giants game.
Yes.
Because
very important.
Missing a Packer game is not...
Not an option.
It's not an option. So you have to backtrack from there, right? So you have to do everything you can from Friday night on
to
make it to the Packer game.
To get up to Sunday for the game. I understand. It's a wise decision, my friend.
I know.
Very
some people followed it, but most people didn't.
You know who followed the script the way they were supposed to?
Me.
The Green Bay Packers.
Oh, yeah.
Winning against the New Orleans Saints to avoid what would have been a pretty pretty awesome hole for them
to
climb out of at 1-3. They're 2-2 going into Indianapolis, which you got to think, if they don't win this game, then there's some serious trouble on board. So hopefully righting the ship a little bit. I know people have questions about the defense, and we'll get to those a little later on. But big victory. But first, let's talk about how they almost blew it. specifically one player from the bench who had to
Who's
come
that?
In for one play.
Who's that, Nagler? Oh, is that a guy you were making
Graham
excuses
Harrell.
For? Is that a guy you were making excuses
See,
for?
See, you're going to go down there already. So Corey and I had a little back and
forth
on Twitter.
I think that's a guy you were making excuses for.
Back and forth on Twitter. He's already twisting my argument.
Is the lamestream media's whole thing?
Is the lamestream media? You did not just pull out the lamestream media.
I'm sorry, but it's like their whole thing that Graham Harrell, he got pushed back and he tripped on his back foot.
Well, did he or didn't he?
I don't know. The lamestream
media
thinks
he did. You were there. You saw it.
The lamestream media thinks he did.
Because that's what happened. Now, let's slow down here.
It's unfortunate.
Anyone who's privy to our back and forth, Corey's whole contention was that Graham Harrell had one job which he was unprepared for because he tripped and fumbled on Sunday. Now.
No.
Yeah, that's what you said.
That's not true.
Wait, unlike you, I'm not twisting what you said.
No, that's not true. You know what I fault Graham Harrell for?
What's that?
Not doing his job. Bottom line.
And you said he was unprepared.
No, bottom line, he didn't do his job.
All right.
If I hand you the ball on the goal line at Lambeau Field, okay?
So if he was at a different stadium, it'd be okay?
No, you cannot. I'm sorry. That's the same place that Bart Starr popped it in. Come on, kid.
I hear you, dude.
It's just not cool, dude.
All I'm saying, and all my entire point was,
the
entire thing started because I dared to say that other people shared in the blame. Is Graham Harrell most to blame on that play? Of course he was. Of course he was. However, there were other people who could share in the blame a little bit.
I mean, I guess it's kind of like Jared Bush not falling on the ball in the NFC Championship 2007.
Not that you're bitter.
No, I'm not bitter about it.
No,
I'm just saying it's that kind
of
play, right? That kid will always be staying with that play. I'm sorry.
That's true.
Except, I'm not trying to be a hater.
I know you're not.
I want him to be amazing, but I know the reality of.
I will say, at least Jared Bush has had an opportunity to like make up for that play. Maybe not in an NFC Championship game, but he has intercepted a ball in the Super Bowl. He's made some other great special teams plays. Like, Jared Bush has been somewhat redeemed.
Now. Oh, yeah, exactly. But you have to
caveat. Graham Harrell will never get a chance
to
be redeemed.
You have to caveat with Graham somewhat Harrell, redeemed. Notice
well,
you say somewhat
well,
redeemed.
Well, has he not?
Somewhat redeemed, yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
But Graham Harrell will never be redeemed. He'll never have a chance.
He will. I think he will.
Let's hope not, because that means Aaron Rodgers isn't playing.
The great thing about a mistake like that is you never make it again, and it kind of hones you.
I hear you.
Good thing.
But the thing is like now his name,
one day.
Until he gets that chance, he is on par with TJ Rubley in Packer lore.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty upsetting.
I mean, that, come
for
on.
Graham for Graham Harrell, that's pretty
man.
Upsetting.
I felt like I was 10 years old again. When you're a Packer player and you can make me feel like I'm 10 years old at a Bishop's charity game.
That's not a good thing.
It's not good. It doesn't make me feel good.
Oh, man. Almighty. Okay. All right. So we're going to move on from Graham Harrell because that was barely, like, anything to do with most of the game.
I mean, I only started a fight with you because I like starting fights
with you
on Twitter.
I know.
Everybody knows
Jeff
that.
Jeff Saturday got blown up. He tripped on his foot. The biggest mistake he made was trying to hand the ball
off
while he's falling down.
I would agree with that.
Don't do that.
That's a split-second decision.
Graham, don't do that.
There you go.
Next time. Don't do that.
Moving on. Greg Jennings. What's
happening? Greg Jennings sounds like he's not going to play on Sunday. Sounds like he could be out for a little while. Now, Jennings was on the radio, I think it was either earlier today or yesterday, where he said that he wasn't ruling himself out for Sunday. But don't let that fool you. Mike McCarthy's comments to the media about not, you know, rushing Greg back this time, and Greg saying he's not coming back until he's 100%, you can mark it zero that he is not playing on Sunday, which will be interesting with the ascension of one Mr. James Jones. 2 weeks in a row, James Jones has been the best receiver on the field for the Green Bay Packers.
As he should.
How does that make you feel?
Well, with Greg Jennings out, he should, though.
But isn't that crazy, though?
No.
James Jones, who everyone wanted gone?
No.
Like James Jones, who's been the subject of, you know, multiple trade rumors, the ire of fans everywhere for the past 2 years, and now he is the best receiver on the Green Bay
Packers. Yeah, but I'm with the 40s.
And yes, people, I'm saying the best receiver, better than Jordy Nelson.
I'm saying I'm with the 47% of Packer fans. That thought, that James Jones
I promised a political-free zone tonight, Banky.
What are you talking about?
I know what that's a reference to.
I am.
Don't try and slip it in.
I've always been in James Jones' camp, so that's all I have to say on that
all
subject.
Right. That's right. Whoever put up the Walter pick on the live blog is absolutely right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And how about, in other news, B.J. Raji fined in the neighborhood of $7,800 for punching Saints long snapper Justin Drescher. Justin Drescher, who I wouldn't know, in a police lineup.
$7,800 is like a half a penny to B.J. Raju.
I know, exactly. And he said he was expecting like a $20,000 fine. And he got
and he was about to write that check too.
He was about to. But so B.J. Raju's a tad lighter in the wallet for punching a guy. You got to think, he got the same fine amount as the guy who absolutely clobbered Greg Jennings the week prior in a totally dirty, like, horrific play in Seattle. Browner, the corner for Seattle. I don't agree with that. Like, B.J. Raju, like, punched a dude who had, like, padding and a helmet on and, like, whatever. Like, a punch? That's not going to do much. But, like, clobbering a guy blindside 20 yards down the field, that should warrant a little more.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go back on the NFL because I don't want to start, like, you know, swearing.
Yeah, why you got to hate on the NFL?
I don't want to start swearing. But how about, speaking of the NFL, meet the new refs. Same as the old refs. Like,
is that the name of the show?
How could you possibly?
You're the NFL.
How do you go through last Monday night and then send Jeff fucking Triplett to Lambeau Field? That's just a slap in the face.
Of course.
That's
it
just
is.
Telling them, you know what? We know you hate us, and we're sending you the worst.
Of course. Of course. Of course. That's how they do. When you don't have a voice in the big office, you know, you spread out those Packer fans to all be shareholders, and now nobody has a voice.
I just saw a question on the live blog. What is Corey's shirt all about?
Oh, yeah, here we go.
This is...
I was going to bring that up. I was waiting to tell everybody yes. You need to trust Ted, you know.
This is Ted Thompson when he was a player, and this is the word trust. So trust
and this is
Ted.
From Aaron Cousineau.
Yes.
Jeebs.
Throw up the link on the live blog. It's fantastic stuff there. Gotta check it out, people.
It's good.
It's really good.
I love this shirt. Thank you, Aaron.
So let's dive into it. Let's dive into the offensive side of the ball here. Green Bay Packers. That's a little more like it. That's what we like to see. However, what I can't like get behind is like, oh, the offense finally finds its groove, or oh, finally the offense finally gets on track, or Aaron Rodgers finally. No, I'm sorry, it was the Saints.
Yeah, I was going to say it was the Saints.
Terrible on defense. I'm excited. I'm happy to see points. I love seeing some Lambeau leaps. Don't get me wrong. I fist pump. I woo. I do whatever. When it
they're 0-4, dude.
But their defense is god awful.
They're 0-4.
If the Packers hadn't walked up and down the field, I would have been really upset and really worried for this team.
I think Drew Brees should tweet about how much the Saints suck.
Drew Brees asking for and apparently getting permission for Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis to be in the crowd next week when he goes for his historic mark of breaking Johnny Unitas' record of throwing however many games with a touchdown pass, which I think I've said here before, but let me just state for the record again. That should absolutely have an asterisk on it. Johnny Unitas did that when defenses were allowed to absolutely destroy guys all over the field and quarterbacks were absolutely, like, hung out to dry by blitzes, by blindsiders, like, whatever. Drew Brees is doing it in an era where guys aren't allowed to be breathed on past 5 yards and the quarterback is protected like he's in a bubble. So Drew Brees may have it in the record
book. Drew Brees is in a bubble?
Yeah, a little bit. But it will always be Johnny U's record. And that's all I got to say about that.
Probably not. Okay, so another bad interception from Rodgers.
What's that about? What is going on? This is the guy who threw 6 all of last year. 6 interceptions. And now he's throwing one almost every game.
That interception was kind of weird, too. But
it was obviously
75% good play and 25%
he thought it was going to be cover 2, and he thought he could fit it in there, and the corner just kept going with Jordy. It's just a throw he doesn't usually make.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something he usually reads and knows not to go for, but he's – I don't know what it is. I don't know. There's a couple other plays where Rodgers, you're just like, what is going on? But then you see some other plays where – it's just like the touchdown, I think it was the first touchdown to Jones, where he slides out of the pocket, guys like diving at his feet, he's stumbling, bumbling, and then he like throws it up, which James Jones admitted was intended for Jermichael Finley, which I found hilarious, who was diving on the ground for it. And then, oh, here's James Jones. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers, there's another play later, I think it was in the second half, where he gets outside the pocket to the right, and he makes this, Jordy Nelson is wide open. For a first down. I mean, wide open. And he throws it, like, out of bounds. And there's another one where, a third down, where he's got the first down staring at him right in the face. John Kuhn is, like, 2 yards in front, like right there. He doesn't throw it to him, and he throws it downfield for an incompletion. Like, that's just not Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, the dude's human.
I understand that. But last year, he wasn't. Last year, he was inhuman. Now, I recognize that guy's not going to put up lights-out numbers every single year.
But what about, like, what about Philbin, though? And what about, like, is it a coaching thing?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I know people want to make a lot of Philbin, and that may play into some of the inconsistencies on the offense as a whole. Mm-hmm. But for Rodgers, he's always leaned on Tom Clements, who is still there, still sitting in the quarterback meetings, still coach presence there game day. So I can't, and still on the sideline. When he comes off the field, Tom Clements is the guy going over the pictures with him and talking to him about what has transpired and what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I can't understand what it is other than something within Rodgers that is different. Now, maybe he's been told to take a little, few more chances. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, that first interception against San Francisco was a split-second thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the one against the Bears was awful.
It was.
The one,
but that one
was
wasn't
James
awful,
Jones.
Though.
The one that was thrown to Briggs was awful.
The problem with that interception, dropped. The problem with that interception is the timing.
Mm-hmm.
It always is, I know, but especially that one. It's like, dude, just drive down the field. Dink and dunk. It's okay.
Now,
don't try to.
Joim 13. Lovely screen name. Joim 13, just point out, and I did want to mention this because I watched it again this afternoon. The touchdown pass to Greg Jennings is one of the most ridiculous throws you will ever see an NFL quarterback make. Like, for everything I just said for about Rodgers and blah, 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 blah,
dude,
blah, this is a point of him taking that one of those chances and it paying off. Because holy cow, there is no earthly reason he should throw that football. And there is no reason in any way, shape, or form in the history of logic that says that it should be completed.
Dude, this play right here tells you what Aaron Rodgers is.
But we got it here, baby!
I mean, he rolls out. It's lovely. I mean, you can't beat that with a bat. Can't. That's the athleticism from Rodgers. That's why when people say, like,
dude,
you
he
know,
had first downs
who do you
where
want to
he
take?
Got him. He's just
who do you want to take? You want to take Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, Manning? I got to take Rodgers because of plays like that. His ability to get outside the pocket and make things happen when everything's breaking down. Brady can slide. You did see him do that last week a little bit. But Rodgers is so athletic. The ability outside the pocket is amazing. So when he does stuff like the incompletions to Jordy Nelson, that's when I go, huh? What's going on? Where's my dude? But, you know, another thing that Rodgers is benefiting from is the play of Cedric Benson.
Oh, yeah.
This cat is off the hook.
And he's getting better every game.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're using him in more a variety of ways. His ability to catch the ball out of the backfield is surprising me. I didn't know he was that adept at it. I'm sure lots of people told me, and I probably just ignored it because that's what I do. But he has been a real light on the offensive side of the ball. And Tom Clements said today, yesterday, something about how he's a workhorse back, a true old-school workhorse back who gets better the more you give him the ball, the longer the game goes on.
Like a Dorsey Levens?
Kind of like a Dorsey Levens.
I like that. That makes me happy.
But this team still can't run a screenplay to save its
not yet, not yet. But that's coming, though. You saw, like, little bits of halves of it.
Yeah.
You did. There was one play that Randall Cobb ran that was screen-like.
That was sweet. That was a sweet play.
Yeah.
No, but it was like a bubble screen guy.
Yeah.
Yes. And how about Cobb? This kid has got all the talent in the world. We got to love it. The one thing I don't.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, they used him in the backfield. The offensive line played better, but they didn't have much to go up against. I mean, again, that Saints front is pretty terrible. They're really slow. Going back and watching the game, I was surprised at how slow they are. Like, it's no wonder. I mean, part of that is because they're in Lambeau. Obviously, that helps on offense. But, wow, that's a slow front. So. Again, I'm glad they played well. I'm glad it went well on offense, but it should have. So I'm not going to get too pumped up about it.
Yeah.
I know Packer fans are the same way, so I won't belabor that point too much. The defensive side of the ball, I think, is what caused a bit of consternation after that game in Packer Nation. The soft zone. The soft zone.
That's your favorite.
The soft
zone. That just makes you happy, doesn't it?
Now, we are going to talk to Mr. Tom Silverstein later in the program, and he had a very interesting take on the soft zone dilemma, if you will, in his post-game reader chat. I love that they call it a post-game chat, and it happens like 5 hours after the game. But I put on Twitter.
He lets people mellow out.
It's a can't-miss feature on JS Online. You know, Bob McGinn had one today. Silverstein had one after the game. That stuff is like just gold. You cannot miss it if you're a Packer fan. And like I said, we'll talk to Silverstein about it because as maddening as it was, he did have some sound logic. I'm sure he has spoken to members of the coaching staff and players themselves about this. So we will rant to Tom about it, and he will calm our nerves. But I'll still rant about it after we talk to Tom because that's what I do. Now, something that was upsetting, and this cannot be explained away by Mr. Silverstein, is the lack of pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a big part of this, and I know it's frustrating when you spend all offseason talking about how, and we've spoken about it here on the program, you've got guys with juice, extra juice. There's more juice on the defensive side of the ball.
More juice. We need more juice.
And yet, your first-round pick is doing very little. The blitz packages are still not getting home when they are sent. But most of the time, it's four guys not getting home. Now, I know that's frustrating. Obviously, Matthews got home on a stunt once. And that was a great play. But, you know, a big part of that was, New Orleans, for as bad as their defensive front is, their offensive line is very good. It's not as good as it was last year, but it is still one of the better O-lines in the league. And two, and I know, that's no excuse. Yeah. You still want to win.
That Clay Matthews sack was sweet.
But there's that element of it. They are very good, and they get paid too. And then the other thing is that Drew Brees was getting the ball out so quick. So many plays you go back and you watch, and the majority of them, especially at the end of the first half when they drove down to get to make it 21-14.
The middle was just,
It was, but it was all three or five step drop. There was no, like, big deep drops where, like, you know, Clay could work. And the problem is like, you watch the pass rush, especially when Capers is sending four, and they're all doing their stunts and whatever. And by the time, like, I saw one where Walden, it's clear the design is for Walden to, like, feint his first step and then come around. And by the time, like, and the design is to have him come around and go right up the A-gap, and it would have been fine. And the A-gap's open, and you see him tumbling around. But by the time he's taking, like, his fourth step and he's barely around the corner, the ball is out of Breeze's hands. So it's like you can do all the stunting in the world, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And now some of that, obviously, is on the secondary.
I mean, that's the thing they used to be really good at,
but when you're playing those soft zones, they're going
to
get
open. They used to be really good at that, though, like taking away the slant, taking away, like.
Yeah. Well, that's because that's when they played press man, and they didn't do that against the Saints. And like I said, we'll talk to Tom about why.
Okay.
Because I don't want to steal his thunder. Because I read it, and I just want him to talk to us about it so he can try and calm us, and I can tell him why that still upsets me.
Tom Silverstein always tends to calm me down. I like
It's one of his most redeeming qualities.
He's a calming dude when you meet him, too.
Yes, he is. Very, very much so. And then I had this question posed to me on Twitter today, and I'd like to throw it out to the crowd because I have my thoughts, and I'm sure you all have your thoughts, and I'm sure, Corey, you'll have some of your own.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked me, who is the best rookie? Who has performed the best through one quarter of the season from the rookie class?
I think there's one guy you got to give it to, if only because he was robbed.
I don't know about that. I'm not sure about your police work there, Norm.
Okay.
I would say, myself, I would say it's either McMillan or Moses.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. That's who I think it is. Now, I know our friend Jersey
McMillan.
Al.
McMillan.
I know. Our friend Jersey Al had posited a case for Casey Hayward, who I also like very much, and I think he's very talented. I think all three of those guys, you could definitely make a case for. Obviously, they all have their weaknesses, they all have their strengths, and I know that people are a bit frustrated with Nick Perry a month into the season. Frustrated that he's not playing as much as you thought maybe a first-rounder would, that he's given away so much to Walden, that when he's in there, he's not generating much of a pass rush. When they put him in pass coverage, it's kind of a joke. But just remember where Clay Matthews was at this point as a rookie. He didn't really start, like, terrorizing quarterbacks even that much later on in the season.
What was the best rookie in the first quarter of the last decade? There you go.
Lord, dude, I don't know.
Come on, Nagler. You can pull it out.
I don't know.
Jarrett Bush.
Why you got to do this to me, dude? Why you got to do that to me? I don't know. Greg Jennings was pretty good, but then he kind of faded as the year went on.
There you go. I'll take it.
But I'll look at it later this week. That's a good question.
I'm just wondering, like, who do you compare him to?
I know. Well, I'm just saying.
Who do you compare at the first quarter?
Clay
you made
Matthews.
A good point. You were, like, comparing him to Clay Matthews, and I thought that was a really good point.
Well, they're rare and few and far between, so that's probably why you pointed it out. Good points. good points are very hard to come by on this show.
I know it's really hard to take a compliment from me. You're like, what is that? What's happening right now?
Am I in the Matrix?
What?
Have I swallowed the blue pill?
Whoa.
What is going on? Anyway. So let's. What do you think we should take a break?
Take a break,
and then we'll call Mr. Silverstein, and we'll.
Is that what we're doing?
Chat some Packers.
Okay.
All right. Sound good? All right. So people, it's Packer Transplants Live. When we come back, we'll be talking to Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So stick around, ladies and gentlemen. We are back live on the line with Mr. Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. How are you tonight, Tom?
I'm doing okay, hanging in there. Another week.
It's lovely to have you back on the show after a couple months. Lots has happened. Obviously, we won't relive Fail Mary, so to speak. But
no.
What's your take on this team a quarter into the season? I don't think it's gone quite how Packer fans expected it to.
Yeah, I think they're kind of a team looking for their identity. I think they were trying to be 2010 Packers, and at least that's what people have been expecting from them. And they're a different team than that. I think there's a lot of things that are different about them, particularly on defense, but even on offense, they're a different team with some changes on the offensive line and, at running back, obviously. And I think we don't exactly know who they are yet. And I don't know. We might get a better idea after this three-game road trip because this is really critical. If they drop two or three, then, we know this is not a team that's going to run away with the NFC North.
Right. Well, especially after you watch the performance Chicago put together on Monday night down in Dallas, and then the Vikings being as surprising as they are, you got to think it's going to be a dogfight all the whole way down the line. Although, obviously, the Packers handled the Bears in Lambeau.
When I was looking at the schedule, I had put down a loss at Detroit. I had a loss at Chicago and a win at Minnesota. And now I would say, maybe sweat that Minnesota and Detroit. I mean, I don't know. Minnesota really looked good. I mean, they had a couple of big special teams plays that, kind of hid some of their other weaknesses. But they're a team that's gaining confidence. In Chicago, I thought they were going to be really good this year.
I did too.
Especially as long as Brandon Marshall stays out of trouble, that's a huge addition.
Yeah.
So, Packers got their hands full in this division.
No doubt. Now, you mentioned, the new parts, the new kind of identity on defense. I just wanted to get to something real quick that you had mentioned in your post-game chat that I thought was very illuminating about the soft zone that we saw used so prevalently against the Saints. It was maddening for fans. Everyone's pulling their hair out. Everyone's yelling, throwing things at the TV. And then I read what you wrote in response to that question about the Saints' offensive formations. Could you talk a little bit about that? I mean, obviously, you're speaking from vast experience here. It was fascinating, I thought.
Yeah, well, when you play a team like the Saints, who line up in all kinds of different formations, use a lot of motion, they tend to use a lot of bunch formations, and against the Packers, they kept their splits between the wide receivers, how far they line up from one another, pretty narrow. And you can try to play man-to-man on that, but if you do, you're really susceptible to picks. And those can be, we saw Brandon Marshall run one of those on Monday night, and the guy was wide open and walked into the end zone. I think Dom Capers decided, I'm going to zone it off and let Drew Brees, he's going to throw for a lot of yards, but we'll just try to be a bend but don't break and try not to give up the really big play. which I think for the most part they did, except for the Sam Shields play, which was inexcusable.
Yeah.
But they also did not play zone defense very well. I think the strategy was sound. I think they've got some guys who are natural man-to-man players. They've got, you know, a young middle linebacker who, you know, has a lot to learn about dropping into zone. you know, McMillan is a young guy, Morgan Burnett. You know, these guys don't have a ton of experience playing zone, and you have to be really disciplined to play zone, and they weren't. So, you know, in the end, they won the game, so Capers kind of got off the hook. But, you know, I'm not really sure that they could have done much else without really giving up a lot of big plays.
Yeah, and the other thing is, we mentioned it in the first part of the show, the problem is it's fine if you play zone, but then your pass rush has got to get home before Breeze can pick you apart, and it just isn't possible when he's doing three-step drops and getting his hands, you know, the ball out of his hands so quickly.
Yeah, and not only that, I think one of the strengths of the Saints is their interior of their offensive line. You know, they got Ben Grubbs and Jahiri Evans. And it's really hard to pressure Breeze up the middle. They really try to keep him protected up the middle. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Packers have been trying to bring Clay Matthews up the middle. They try to get him matched up one-on-one on a guard. And it's been successful, but the Saints were really good and stout in the middle. And then they tried to, you know, they chipped on Matthews. They doubled on him. And if you don't get to Drew Brees, if you don't get any pressure on him, he'll just carve you up because he's all about timing, getting the ball out quickly, you know, throwing the ball before the guy even makes his break. And he just made a couple of phenomenal throws down the middle where he threw it, you know, over the linebacker, but just between the safeties. And there's not a lot of guys who can make that throw. So I think, you know, the pass rush, I don't know what more Capers could have done aside from just blitzing like crazy, and I don't think that would have been a good idea.
Yeah, no. I totally agree with you there. Switching over to the offensive side of the ball, is this James Jones' coming out party, so to speak? I know it's like we've been – fans have been up and down on this guy. He's obviously, you know, been brutal with the drops in the past, and there's multiple reports about him possibly being traded, and those have come and gone. But now he's put together three really solid games. I mean, he was absolutely close to a savior in Seattle, some of the catches he made. And then against the Saints, he was absolutely the best receiver on the field.
Yeah. Well, I'm not falling for it yet. You know, the whole question with James Jones has been consistency.
Yep.
And everybody knew he's got talent. You know, he's a big guy. He should be a good run after the catch guy. I've always thought he's been kind of disappointing in that area. He's a big physical guy. He's got good hands. You know, it's just some of his concentration has been bad. I think he has matured a lot, and I think opportunity has been the biggest thing for him. They're almost, you know, they're forced to use him. It's not a situation where, you know, for instance, the Chicago game, you know, he runs that bad route and they throw an interception. Well, you know, Jennings doesn't play, you know, or can barely play against Seattle, and they still have to use him. And so he got a chance to redeem himself right away, and he did. I mean, you got to give him a lot of credit. He did in that Seattle game.
He sure did.
He was the one receiver who showed up. And then he played another really nice game yesterday. So, or I'm sorry, Sunday. I don't know what day it is.
It's all right. We're right there.
So I'm interested to see, you know, I want to see it over, you know, a course of the whole season and see if he stays consistent. But he's definitely going to get opportunity with Greg Jennings out.
Well, speaking of which, how, I mean, obviously there's been lots of talk about Greg Jennings. Now, you know, he had the concussion in camp, and now he's got the groin issue, was hurried back too much. I was found it interesting him saying adamantly, I'm not coming back till I'm 100%. Almost like, I don't know, was that a – I mean, fans are really in the dark when it comes to this kind of thing. Is that the team's call, you got to get out there, or is that kind of that decision made in concert? I mean, how does that work, like, that he was out there against the Saints but clearly wasn't ready?
Yeah, well, a lot of times it's the team has to trust the player, that the player is telling them how they feel, being honest with how much pain they're in, you know, how much soreness, how much stiffness. But, you know, then they also have to judge by, that's why they watch all this practice tape, to see, you know, is the guy running the way we need him to. I thought Greg Jennings was the shell of himself against Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised they didn't kind of, well, they did a little bit. They didn't use him as much as, you know, they would have if he was healthy. He clearly was not himself. Those, you know, quick hitters, you know, when he was in the
spot. Oh, yeah. And then they hit him, and then he's, like, dancing, and it was just, there was no explosion.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw that in week one. I think it was San Francisco, wasn't it, where
yep.
he got that ball out in the near the sideline, and he made Carlos Rogers, I think it was, just
yep.
die for error.
Mm-hmm.
So that we haven't seen Greg Jennings since then.
Yep.
I think, you know, I saw on Twitter that some people took Jennings saying, I'm not coming back till I'm 100% as a comment on his being a contract year
right.
and all of that. I think what he was saying is that it's fruitless for him to try to keep coming back, aggravating it, come back, aggravating it. He's not doing the team any good. He's not doing himself any good. I really think with a groin injury, you really do need to get it healed completely.
Well, especially as you say, like, it's such an important part of his game, his ability to move and make guys miss. Like, he's never been a big – he's not Andre Johnson. He's not Calvin Johnson. You know, he's not a big go-up-and-get-it kind of guy. He's a guy who works like a technician. And if one of his parts
right.
isn't working, it's not going to be any good.
Outstanding route runner. And,
yeah.
you know, he runs – most of his routes at the same speed, so it's really hard to tell when he's going deep, when he's going to break it off. And he couldn't stretch the field. And if you can't do that, then, you know, they're just going to squat on him, and it's going to be harder for him to get open. And really, he's taking reps away from James Jones,
mm-hmm.
You know, and right now James Jones is playing better. So I actually think that's a smart idea. I think they're going to need him the second half of the year, and they need him healthy. So they might as well take care of it now.
Going back to the defensive side of the ball, we got Mike Neal coming off of suspension. Do you have any, I don't know, I'm not going to say hopes, because I know your life doesn't rise and fall on the Packers' fortunes like ours do. But do you see him doing anything? I mean, I know he didn't exactly light it up in camp, but he did look a little more explosive towards the end of the preseason.
Yeah, I thought he kind of forced them to give him snaps towards the end, because I think he practiced really well. And then, you know, it was almost like they had to see what they had. Unlike Anthony Hargrove, where he just never really showed anything, and then they just didn't give him any snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So I am interested in seeing him, but, you know, my expectations there are low because of his injury history. I think if he's healthy, he can help them. I don't know how good he's going to be. You know, I think Terrell Worthy is a much more talented player. I think Mike Daniels has, you know, better wiggle and you know, drop his hips and get, you know, hustle and get sacks that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't have too many defensive linemen. And if this guy can help them in the nickel especially, they're going to need it. So he kind of brings a different element, too, you know, whereas Worthy and Daniels are kind of
They're like quick penetrators, whereas like Neil is somebody who's going to take your head off.
Right. He's a bull rush guy. Yeah. And then, you know, he uses his speed. But they don't really have a power guy like that. And they could use someone like that. So we'll see. You know, whatever that he gives them is probably gravy. Because, you know, you can't really count on him being healthy, not based on his history.
And finally, we've touched on offense. We've touched on defense. We try to be complete and go through all three phases here at Cheesehead TV. What about the special teams? Holy cow. Get the bust ready for Slocum. You know, the part of the team that was so ridiculed by fans is all of a sudden like the best part of the team. Is that simply because they've got better players, or has Mike and Slocum kind of just turned this thing around?
Well, McCarthy made a really interesting comment today. He was talking about the special teams units, and he was saying how, you know, in past years they had to drag guys, unwillingly to special teams and make them play it. And that now they've got a bunch of guys who really enjoy playing special teams, and that's their niche. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, they've finally got special teams that are special teamers, full of special teamers. And I think that's been a factor. And then their kicking game is good. You know, you can't play down what Tim Maste has meant.
Absolutely.
He rarely has a shank. His punts are usually good hang time, and that helps in coverage. So, they've got some things going on, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they can keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, but do you think that has played into Mike's riverboat gambler motif all of a sudden this year on special teams?
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly feeling more confident about how they're doing it. You know, the fake field goal was sort of gave him the confidence to do the other one, fake punt. You know, if they don't get that fake field goal or it doesn't work very well, then I don't see him calling that other one.
No way.
and so, you know, once you get one of those going, now he's got two, you know, he's probably going to onside kick on the first.
You know he will. Come on, that's totally.
Oh, yeah.
Either opening of a game or opening of a half. Come on, that's got to happen at some point.
Yeah.
But you know what he mentioned in one of his I don't know if it was post game or it was a Monday press conference, but I went back and watched. He mentioned he thought that play would have gone for a lot more, the fourth and one to Kuhn, and he's right. Somebody in the middle kind of gets, I don't know, their blocker, they just missed their block a little bit, and if they get on that block, Kuhn is gone for like 20 or 30 yards. There's nothing in front of him. So
Yeah, Slocum mentioned that too. He said someone got displaced. I haven't watched it.
It's like it's somebody right in the. I can't remember who it is, but it's somebody up in the middle. One of the up guys for the Saints just gets inside of the block, and that ruined it.
Yeah, exactly. And well, you know, the Saints only had six guys there, and I remember watching it, going, you know, they're doubling both guys outside. They only got six guys in the middle, you know. It almost was like taking candy from a baby there, you know.
And they need
eight on six, you better. There's no reason. I mean, there's always stuff that can go wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And
oh, did we lose him?
Oh.
Tom.
Come back.
Call him back so we can say goodbye.
Okay.
Oh, no. Oh, Tom. The sweet sounds of Skype.
The looks of dead air. Gotta love it.
Back of Transplants, baby.
Trust.
That's how we roll.
Hi, sorry about that.
Sorry, Tom. I'm sure that's the gremlins telling us that it's
time to
wrap it up. I said we had to call you back to say thanks for coming.
Yeah.
and thanks so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. I'm sorry it took so long.
Oh, no, please. You're a busy guy.
Tom Silverstein, you're like a star. Are you crazy? I watch every one of your videos. Come on. I've got the new ones posted on here. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
You're amazing, dude. You're amazing.
Yeah, well, Leroy Butler does. He's the amazing one.
But you draw it out of him. You draw it out of him, Tom.
The whole Packer beat writer, hello. Come on. No, come on. That's the essentials right there.
I need you to do some publicity for me.
Yeah, well,
we're doing it right now.
We're on top of it. We are on top of it. All right, Tom, you're an absolute legend. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, not a problem. Anytime.
All right. That's Tom Silverstein, Packers beat writer with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Joining us here, Packer Transplants Live, because that's how we roll.
That's how we roll, baby.
The best and the brightest cover the Packers.
Dude.
They all do this show, except for Bob McGinn.
Tom Silverstein. Oh, Bob McGinn. Why you got to say that?
But Bob McGinn will be on this program soon. I guarantee.
One day.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to lure him with the hook of we are going to promo his book.
Yeah.
His book.
There you go.
Everyone needs to check out because it's awesome.
Yeah, well, the Super Bowl book was ridiculous.
Oh, it's redonkulous.
So I think it's time in that time of the
show. It is that time of the show.
This week in the Packer blogosphere.
That's right, it's This Week in the Packer Blogosphere, the return of that venerable series.
This week,
I wanted to point out some of our own stuff. We're always pointing out everybody else around the blogosphere or pumping up Throwback Weekend. But this week, I wanted to point out Zach's grades on CheeseheadTV.com because I thought they were great. Make sure you check out the homepage.
Oh, yeah.
After the show is over,
Zach is blowing it up. He's everywhere. I saw him on JS Online.
He's on
dude.
JS Online. He's
he
on
writes
Bleacher
for
Report.
JS Online. He writes for Bleacher Report.
He writes for us. He's the man. He's a renaissance man. Anyway, check out his grades. And I agree. Here are his grades for all three phases of the game. Mm. Offense gets a C+.
I give him a B-.
No. I got to agree with Professor Zach.
I don't agree.
The defense gets a B-. I agree with that as well.
I think they get
and
a C
this
plus.
Is the only one
C
I get.
Plus,
this,
plus.
Nope, this is the only one I quibble with. Specialists get an A-. Nope, I gotta say straight A. Straight A
you
for specialists.
You know what I was gonna say about the specialists?
What's that?
Okay, so I had really great seats. I was on behind Tremont Williams' father, which I never said anything to him because Packer fans next to me were being very annoying, and I'm just not that.
You want
to
be that guy?
I refuse to be that guy.
You don't want to taint the Cheesehead TV brand.
And I don't. Yeah, I don't. I don't need that association. So
no.
I chose to be. You know, just he was amazing, though. I mean, he was all in it. Anyway, you're so close. We're right in front of where Mason Crosby and Tim Asthe do all their practice.
Do their stuff.
Yeah, they're just like. Dude, they go at it. Like, it's awesome. It's
hey, good. I heard Tom Crabtree spotted you in the crowd.
Yeah, and I saw him, too. It's funny. I swear I saw him. I'm like, Tremont comes over
at
the end of the game and, like, slaps everybody's hand. And this is what I'm talking about. The guy next to me was like, oh, trying to be all in it, too. And I'm just
dude,
like, it's so
it's
annoying.
Family. Get the
yeah, he's,
away.
Like, there to say to slap his dad's hand after a game, and you have to ruin it. It's so annoying. Anyway, I digress.
That's what we do on the show.
Tremont shakes everybody's hand, and I look up, and Tom Crabtree's like looking at me, and I'm like, dude. And I didn't wave. I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, oh no, because it was so quick.
Right.
That I was like, ah, I'm
not gonna go, Tom.
Come on,
Tom. Not like that. No. Maybe you did. You probably did.
I can't remember.
It couldn't have been any different than Bob McGinn.
Bob McGinn makes you so happy. Bob McGinn thought I was the craziest person I met him, I'm sure.
No.
Because I was so happy.
I can't tell you
how happy I was.
I know, dude. I've been there.
Because the first time I saw him, he ran away from me because I was trying to take his picture.
It's a classic. It's a classic moment in Cheesehead TV lore.
Yeah, it is.
As it were. All right, so Colts on Sunday. Got to be thinking Packer victory here.
Oh, yeah.
Climb that record to 3-2.
Do it.
Big prayers, shout outs to Chuck Pagano, head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, diagnosed with cancer. Can't say enough thoughts and prayers. I know everyone's read about it. Everyone has heard about it. They're obviously going to have an interim coach probably for the rest of the year. Bruce Arians is taking over for the Colts, so he'll be coaching his first game ever as a head coach in the NFL. against the Packers. Sorry we have to hand you your first loss, Bruce. But
I'm not really sorry.
Sorry. I'm sorry for that. I'm not sorry.
No,
that
I'm 100% sorry for the human element.
Right.
I mean,
but for a Packers victory, I apologize.
We're humans first, football fans second. But it's close. It's really close.
I don't know about all that. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of Packer Transplants Live. We'd like to thank our guest Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. Not to mention everyone for joining us on the live blog. You guys really helped make this a unique fan experience that can't be found anywhere else. That's why Corey and I are here. We are, and we always will be, devoted Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. We'll see you all soon. Have a great night.
Can be used in any positive way whatsoever.
I'm not in the mood for drama tonight, Jason. Okay? I appreciate that.